Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 17 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our guests today include Jerry Golke of the Golke Group out of Chicago, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Jason Clapp of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
I can believe it.
Really? Wow. I've seen 30 and 40 bushels, and I didn't like that. But they told me that if it gets away from you, and it can do it late. It doesn't have to happen in July. It can happen the last half of August and destroy that corn, when you least expect it. But so that said, we're hearing that out of Iowa. Guys are saying that one agronomist in Iowa said that it's bad enough that he thought it would take 10 bushels an acre off of the really good yield they thought they were going to have in Iowa. And if it's 10 bushels an acre on the whole state on average, then that's pretty significant. But they said they took the top end off and they were surprised to see it come in. So
I said,
maybe there's hope yet. Huh?
I think Sue Martin said that around her area, she thought it'd be down 10 to 15 bushel because of the Goss's wilt or whatever. So, yeah.
Yep. So there's enough there that maybe we dodge a big bullet or something if we can get Illinois or Iowa to come back down a little bit. And parts of Minnesota, I guess, have some slight problems. But probably be along, I talked to some friends and clients in Michigan and they said, even up here, he said, I don't know. He said, in the field, he said, my field varies so much. He said, I really don't know until I'm done combining. So we're probably looking beyond October before we really know.
I think you're right.
Well, that, of course, is Jerry Golke and Wayne Nelson. We're talking with them here on Commodity Week. Jerry, I've had the recorder running for just a little bit. Is that okay?
All right. Sure.
Good enough. Also on hand with us is Kurt Kimmel. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for
good
being
here. Good afternoon,
with us.
Guys.
And, hi, Kurt.
Hi.
Jerry and Jason Clapp is with us, too. He's with Risk Management Commodities. Jason, you are on the line, right?
Yep. Just listening.
Soaking
in all this knowledge that Kurt's about to lay down on me.
Not much today, man.
Well, all right. So let's go ahead and see who's been in the field and what we're hearing. So we got Jerry a little bit from the Rockford area. I know, Jason, on Monday, your family had started there in Indiana. Where in Indiana, and what do things look like for you?
We're about 25 miles straight north of Terre Haute and got started in probably what's going to be some of our worst corn just because it started going down here late in the season. We turned off real dry in late July and August, and that really hurt us. But yields are standing in there pretty decent, running about 180 bushel corn to the acre so far, and haven't started any beans. I know Chuck's up here running some soybeans around Lafayette, and they're doing decent, not as good as last year. But, seems like everyone I've talked to so far has been about 15 to maybe 20 bushels off of last year on soybean yields so far.
All right. Soybeans is kind of where I want to stay. Despite what happened yesterday on Wednesday with the FSA numbers, the wrong set posted to the website to begin with, the 2014 numbers, and frankly, as a representative of the media and somebody who works inside the university system, that's not an official report, and my view is it's simply not an official report, and it's my job to check those numbers. So if you were trying to use it for some other reason, that's your job to check them. They'll look at it, but I would think they probably just had somebody drop them up on the website because that's not an official report. Anyway, those numbers show some interesting things. Jerry Golke, I think you went through them pretty tightly. What'd you see in there for soybeans that made you think more about the marketplace a little bit?
Well, the We saw the market lose that 2 million acres that they were talking about, but we knew that last month, and it didn't change much. So it's kind of interesting. I didn't think it would get any bigger. I thought 2 million acres to prevent plant beans was might have been a stretch, but I guess it's there. So I don't think they have a history of pulling it back a half a million acres. But my take on the whole thing was in corn acres, I wasn't surprised. As you know, we had some numbers out in March, and we hit it awful close last year, 100,000 acres last year by the time they got done in June and January. And this year it looks like we're, if we extrapolate right, and what we've done is taken the amount of FSA acres that have been reported and certain percentage, and then you say, okay, if this is true in the comparison times before, here's what the final is going to look like. And our corn acres come in again about 135,000 within the government's number. We're still a little bit lower than they are. But I think what it told me this year, like it did last year, is that farmers reacted to high-priced inputs. And my opinion has been, and in talking to clients, and we had a one-day seminar in Chicago yesterday from some people from various states, Iowa and Indiana and Ohio and Minnesota, they pretty much had their mind made up last fall, and they didn't waver by the market changes last spring. And I'm wondering whether we're not doing a better job of looking at things financially and saying, this is what I'm going to plant, because it looked to me like when the acres were planted, we stopped. We didn't, the age-old story, and I get it all the time at the Board of Trade. It's amazing to me how little those people know, but they will tell me flat out, you farmers, you get on a planter seat, and you don't get off until you have to get off. And I say, no, it's not like that anymore. This is big money, and we are smarter than you think. So the theory is that we're going to keep planting corn until we can't plant corn anymore. And I think the change in prices has changed that, and we saw that in this report. So I'm not sure what it means for next year, but I don't think we are as crazy about planting acre and acre and acre of corn. If the price isn't there, the profit, then we put it off. We plant something that loses less. And so that's kind of my take on it, and I'm not surprised at it, although I thought we probably had more acres, even with prevent plant coming down. I thought maybe we might have started in that 87 million acre level and backed off from that, but apparently not.
No, we have a couple of reports that are due out, Kirk Kimmel. Eventually we'll get to the October 9 report. USDA is expected to include in that October 9 report another dump from the FSA. We won't know what that dump looks like until the 14th, 5 days later. But prior to that, we'll get to the grain stocks report. Anything that worries you as we finish up the last marketing year and find out what's truly left in the bin?
Well, probably the one number to watch would be the beans. There was an awful hard time gathering beans for these crushers. In fact, it takes some downtime. There's huge bases on to need and so forth. So last year's ending stock, 210, it might be a little tighter. Just the observations we saw, guys seem to sell a lot of the beans and hang on to the corn. And wouldn't be surprised the corn number stays fairly lofty, because as we wrapped up the end of the marketing year there, the phones rang off the hook. What should I do with my old corn? Should I sell or should I, roll it into new crop? So I think we'll see what those numbers are and kind of go from there.
All right, I kind of want to go around the horn, because I know one of you, and maybe more than one of you, is feeling a little more bullish. Let's see where we're at on corn and soybeans. Wayne Nelson, neutral, bearish, bullish?
Well, I think we have to be a little bit neutral in here. I think that as we look at this time of year, we look at the weather, it's awfully hard to get really bulled up. I know that there's a few cycles coming in that say we could do this or do that and move up a little bit. We've heard quite a few people say the bottom is maybe in, but that's down around the 360 in the corn and the 850 in the beans. And I think that for now, those will probably hold until we see more harvest numbers. But I think we're in a trading range as we speak now until we see a few more numbers. As far as we're talking about things like that, the numbers, what we saw in the numbers yesterday was there seemed to be a larger variation or differential between the FSA numbers and what the government numbers are. If you look back in past years, I think that we were closer than that. We were about double the differential between. And are those acres going to go away in the October report for the final thing with the government, or is the FSA going to find some more planted acres? That's sort of the question mark out there. But, so until we see some more of those numbers, you know, the interest rates stayed nothing and didn't make any change. The dollar did drop on it. Will that start helping us, or is the world economy just crazy enough to hold us in check?
Now, just on that note, for those who want to know what Darrell Good has to say about that, you can go visit the willag.org website. That's willag.org website. There is a video there I produced with him yesterday. He'll take you through those numbers and the differentiation. Okay, so we're looking at bears, bulls, and neutrals. Kurt Kimmel.
Well, I kind of agree with Wayne. At this price level, I've got to be kind of neutral, but you get down to those lower levels that Wayne mentioned there, I think you got to be optimistic. End user needs to get some coverage on. There's short crops in some areas. There's plenty of storage around. A lot of storage went up, and I think guys are going to be hesitant to sell at these levels and want to hang on. So I believe we're in a trading range, and I believe once we get through the first, second week in October here, we can start the seasonal up into year-end. Now, that does not mean we're going to go as high as everybody wants it to go, but I think there's some upside potential.
All right, Jason Clapp, I know where you stand. At least I think I do. You probably better give me your corn number, what you think the actual yield will be, and what that means for you.
Sure. We're bullish here from this point on just really, you know, lower production. We're going to estimate corn yield at about a 161 and bring our production total somewhere around the 13 billion bushel mark. And then with soybeans, thinking more of like a 43.5 national average yield on those. And then, you know, going into the end of the year, you know, we've got reasons to believe that the market will trend higher, you know, based on those kind of production numbers. And then, you know, some kind of global weather patterns that are hurting production in places, you know, other than just the U.S. this year.
All right. And Jerry Gulke, your view on both?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I was encouraged by goes all the way back to June 30th stocks report. And, you know, we felt that there was less stocks out there. A lot of people thought there was 100 million more. It came in less. That showed our usage was better, or the crop wasn't as good in 14. Now, we did it again the other day where they lowered stocks again, and it's kind of like someone's warning us, saying be careful for a September 30th report. It could be tighter yet, and I think that speaks well of demand, and that is not going to falter near as much as we maybe think, or some of the people on, you know, CNBC think we're going to fall apart because of China, but I think that's going to help, and I believe I agree with some of the other bulls out there that that may be the thing that we've underestimated is the demand. And I went back last year and looked at last year's report that came out, you know, this year or that last year at this time, and what the expectations were for carryout for 2014-15. And I don't have the exact numbers with me now, but it was quite shocking. The government, Informa, some of the best missed our carryover big time in both corn and beans compared to what we ending this year with, especially the beans. And maybe we're missing the boat on global demand on this thing. If every other country besides China uses a little bit more, that helps a lot. And so I sure don't want to sell anything down here. You put it in the bin, you can earn the carry on corn and beans. You know, we're coming into the winter or their spring in South America. You know, they're going to get another perfect crop down there. I think it's worth the risk to find out.
Interestingly enough, if I think about the last 2 years, Jerry, for at least the corn carryout, I think they started both over 2 billion.
Two billion, yep.
Yeah. And they might blame some of that on ethanol, but they should have known what the ethanol usage was going to be, so I don't think they could have done that. There was demand there that was coming in from other sources that were not expected. I suppose it could flatten out. I can't imagine you can really call China demand for corn, so I don't
right.
I don't know where that came from.
It's already there. You know, one other thing, I know I met with some people out there four or five years ago at least. One of the things they complained about at USDA was the absence of availability of good people. You know, the private industry is sucking up a lot of talent. Some of the older guys were put out, you know, they were given early retirement, and the guys that have been around a long time who've been through these things before. So I think we're working with a workforce, not just in USDA, but we see some of that even in Forma. I know some people that I've known for a while there that now the oldest people there, and a lot of them doing some of these analysis are nothing wrong with being young. I was there once, but you know what I mean. There's room for error, and maybe what we saw just the other day with the problem with USDA was
was inexperienced, having not been through this before. So I think it's maybe old age and beauty wins out, wins over beauty again one of these days.
All right. So I've got a couple of bulls, and I've got a couple of, I'm going to call you neutral to friendly.
Steers.
Yeah, you got a couple of steers. Thanks, Wayne. So I suspect that that gives me two different versions of what a producer ought to be doing in the marketplace. Soybeans may be easier to handle than corn on this one, and it may be very much the same, but maybe we should get an idea. Jason Clapp, what do we do with soybeans off of the combine?
You know, if you've got one of those situations where you have to go to the elevator with them, I've got several guys talking about doing some basis contracts, and even rolling those basis contracts maybe out to the March futures. Probably don't want to go too much further than that, because you start running into, you know, your South American soybean harvest there while we're planting our crop. So, you know, that's definitely an idea. And then also looking at, you know, selling them outright and re-owning with some call options, you know, here, you know, at these levels, and riding it into the end of the year and see how this thing plays out.
No, I like that strategy. If you need to move them, but do some replacements, and even maybe consider a little bit of Texas hedge in here, because what's going to happen is guys will want 40, 50 cents to the upside, and they'll get within 5 cents of it and stall out. So if you have an additional position on paper, you only need to go up half as much to recoup to the upside what you need to get some cash flow needs through this winter.
All right. So let's do the corn, and we'll start with you, Wayne Nelson.
Well, I think I agree with Jerry on this. This price that we've got right now in front of us isn't very attractive. In most cases, it's going to be barely break even to a loss in some cases, depending on whether you're in Indiana or Iowa. And I think that along those lines, like we've said, there are lots and lots and lots of bins. There is carry in the market, and I guess that's what we're looking at. Now, we would, if we could get a run up in the 420 bracket or something like that, we'd probably let some go. And then if you want it, you can replace with an option of paper. But I think that everybody's going to need a little cash flow. It hasn't been a kind summer as far as marketings went. So, you know, we're going to have to sell a little bit.
And Jerry Golke on corn?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I've looked at some of the carry, and I watched my local basis drop 3 cents yesterday. The other day, there was only 4 cent carry from fall delivery till January. And of course, if you bring grain to an elevator, you can pay 15, 16 cents perhaps, and end up losing 12 cents. So the incentive is for the guy coming off the combine, why would I want to store it? I can sell it and get my money. And I think that's how elevators make their money. And then today, of course, yesterday, last night, they dropped 3 cents and didn't do anything with the far out month. So we're starting to get that carry out there. And when I look at doing some things that we know how to do as farmers with the grain bins, I look at it from a return on interest per annum. And if you can pick up 15% return for 6 months, that's 30% a year. That's almost better than any investment out there. And you almost have to look at that. What's my grain worth today, and what's it worth in 6 months? And if you have a loan to pay off, you know, that's the time to go to the banker and say, I'll pay you your 4.5%. And you can have first dibs on the grain when I sell it for March or May delivery. And I'll make some money, and so will you. And we'll be we'll make this thing look a little bit better. I think $4 corn, which is ironically, you go back in July highs, if we could see March go to 454 area for some reason, an October report could do that in the long run. That gets $4 corn for almost everybody, even me with a 40-cent basis. And I think you pull a lot of corn out of the field out of bins at $4 cash to the farmer, and he'll start looking for 2016 pricing opportunities then as well.
You think that's a real possibility?
Oh yeah, I do. And But as they say, you know, I reserve the right to change my mind if something changes. But
don't we all?
That's what flexibility is about. But right now, you know, I look at things from a technical standpoint, psychologically, and I don't think we're going to take out last fall's lows, which 318. And if we don't, then you know, the lows, I felt the lows are probably behind us in the cash market when we made that real fall dropped that one day when, you know, August report, we fell out of bed. We put in a pretty good range there, and worst case, we go sideways until we know more. And you know, hidden in all these reports was some of the government world numbers dropped. The stocks in the corn and soybeans dropped, and maybe it was due to, you know, partly to the United States. But in looking at the global situation, we will use in corn, beans we probably have a surplus, but we're going to use more this year globally than what we're going to produce, barely, or just maybe break even. So it's not so bad. I think the market would respond to a shock from somewhere, Argentina or Brazil, cutting their production and then getting, you know, the El Nino effect down there. So at these prices, you know, it doesn't give me any incentive to rent land or buy more land and grow the same kind of crop. If this is the best they're going to give me, then I get that hunker down, and I certainly aren't not looking for land or machinery to, or anything that's going to increase my efficiency.
Okay.
These are break even at best for some of us that don't have a lot of money borrowed, and for those that do, this is tough times down here.
Yeah. On that note, I do want to talk a little bit about land and cash rents and what producers might think about. They may be a little early in the process, but later this fall they'll have to have that conversation with their landlords. Jason, maybe I'll start with you on this one. How do you deal with it? Because it's clear that the landlords are going to say we don't want to give you everything that you need, because we think probably the fertilizer dealer and the seed dealer and everybody else maybe need to have their fair share. How do you go have that conversation, and how much do you think, if any, land cash rents will change?
Boy, I don't know if cash rents will change a whole lot, especially, you know, if we saw a bone get thrown to us and we had a harvest rally here. You know, I think landowners would be more inclined to kind of leave cash rents where they are. But, you know, the conversations, you know, as uncomfortable as they might seem or might be, I think they still need to be had. And, you know, I think the thing to keep in mind is, you know, as a grower and a landowner, we're kind of in this together. I mean, you know, land is still a product, and, you know, obviously that's something that we're looking for. So, you know, the conversations need to be had, and if agreements can't be reached, then, you know, at the worst, it may behoove a farmer to go backwards in acres, you know, in order to kind of maintain a positive margin than it would to, you know, just farm it and hope for the best.
Anybody else want to jump in, or is it?
Well, from what I've heard from our clients out west, at least in Iowa, they're saying that, you know, land that was running $250 to $300 an acre, they're trying to get $50 an acre, and in some cases they decided to walk away from it. The landlord did come down. I think 10% might be a pretty hard sell for the landowner to take, but. Certainly, 7 or 8% drop, especially if they didn't get anything last year. In my case, I you know, I have some people that I rent land from for the last 20 or 30 years, and we've always, when times are good, I give them more, and when times are bad, and so I've called them up and last year, and I said, you know, times are not good, and I wanted, $5,000 off of a rent, we'll say, and they said, well, I'll go too. If they aren't any better than this next fall, then we'll do that. So, when I send them a letter and just kind of talk about things, I sent him a chart, and I think that tells the story in corn and beans both, and that kind of helps them see the picture, and they hear about, you know, the insurance payments and all this kind of stuff, but they don't understand that it costs money to get that. So I would like to see a 7% reduction, and that's probably only $20 or $25 an acre on $300 an acre land, and that's a minimum. I would think that's going to be pretty tight.
Yeah, probably will still put you at a loss. That's what Gary Schnitke is telling us about the budgets for the coming year. Jason, you were there on Monday night. He was looking at a $100 loss, maybe. And I want to say cash rents went up nationwide $5 last year. I think that's actually right, that they actually went up last year still.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Nationwide. So we'll see. What do you think, $30 maybe?
I would say probably $30 to $50 is going to be more logical than the people are going to give $100 right to start.
I don't think $100.
Well, you're saying Gary said that.
Well, that's what you need to find. That's what you need to find in order to break even.
Okay. And then we would hope that your fertilizer dealer, your chemical dealer, and your seed dealer might help you find part of that 100. But I do think that depending on what level you're at and what we're looking at, we all like to see our tenants, you know, not lose money. We don't need to feel that they get totally rich if you're a landowner, but you like to see them do well. They have to make money to make their payment to you because the bank's on there first. So, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot of people. Anybody that was in farming and then turned around and re-rented ground is going to be a lot easier to work with than somebody that never was on the farm.
Good point.
Well, it is going to be a tough 2 years. This year and next year. Last year was tight, but these 2 years are going to be really tight for producers looking forward. So they're going to have to do a lot more marketing, I suppose, than they have certainly in the previous five, because that was a pretty easy marketing run. But now they're going to have to, Kurt, really think seriously about every acre and every bushel and every penny, I suppose.
Yeah, you're just going to have to push the pencil. You're going to have to, you know, look both sides, inputs and outputs. Main thing, probably the best advice, is stay flexible in your marketing so you can capture those opportunities when they do arise. They will be there. You just got to be in position to take advantage of them.
And what does that mean?
Well, one is on the cash grain side, you just got to shop around bids and be on top of them because there's going to be spot bids where there's going to be good opportunities to move grain when they need it. Then secondly, we've been put together strategies to replace some ownership on paper. So if you feel the market's going to go higher, and it will at some point in time, you got to kind of double up down here so you can take advantage of an up move in here. You just can't, I believe, you just can't hang on to your cash because it's probably not going to move high enough as much as you want it to. So you got to get a little leverage in here that's manageable, that's kind of risk contained. You just can't go long straight to board your production, but there's some strategies you can implement to be in the position to capture that up without the risk.
You know, and there's also the La Nina effect coming along with the long-term forecast, saying we're going to have a dry summer next year, Todd, a wet spring and a dry summer. So we could see some flexibility out there. We probably don't want to get oversold into this next 16 crop too soon or without being flexible in how we do it.
You know, I have talked to the weather guys a little bit about El Nino and its impact this winter. Should be warmer and wetter. And then some about next summer for the northern hemisphere. You mentioned an impact. Is there very much, Jerry, for the southern hemisphere? Do you know?
No, I've heard that, you know, that Argentina and I think Brazil even have looked to compare back their corn acres, and I think they're talking about because it may stay consistently wet down there. Our guys that we worked with were more concerned about next year's dryness and moving from the west to the east and maybe hitting the western part of Iowa and Nebraska and that area in the western North Dakota, in a straight line up and down maybe through 281 in North Dakota perhaps and on south of Nebraska, that area. If we solve a problem in California and we can get this jet stream to change a little bit from a trough from west, I guess, ridge east or whatever, and that's low, then we could move some of that heat east. And some of their comments were that, you know, I'm really concerned about 2016. So we'll see how that looks. But I think we found this year that, you know, we had pretty good weather all over. We had too much rain, and we found out that hurts crops. So I don't know if if we haven't looked at maybe the high water mark for some of these yields last year and this year. And like someone said earlier, that they're looking at 161 corn yield this year. We don't have a problem in getting anything priced for next year because that's going to crimp our stocks tight enough that somebody's going to have to pay up to make sure they get the corn acres. Mm-hmm. And right now, I don't think you get I don't know if you get over 90 million acres next year without some sort of a price incentive that makes it look good to the fringe states.
Just one other quick note on the weather, and I don't remember or recall which of the meteorologists I talked to during the week on the closing market report mentioned this, and whether they said it on air or off air. Did you know that the polar cap at the southern pole is the largest it's ever been or ever been measured at this point? It will melt back apparently fairly quickly, and that was one of the reasons that they had the freeze last week. But it will melt back apparently fairly quickly. But it's a A big cold ice mass down there at this point. Okay, let's talk about the end of this program. Maybe Jason Clapp will let you start, give some thoughts about things, anything you want to that farmers should consider, or just on safety.
Sure. Well, yeah, first and foremost, be safe, you know, while we get out here and get this harvest started. You know, it's one of those things. Keep in mind that your July futures and your next December futures are running pretty close to one another. So if you're thinking about selling some old crop, you know, well, while you're riding around in the combine, give a thought to new crop as well.
Kurt Kimmel?
Just one thing keep in mind is just don't sit back and wait for a problem in the southern hemisphere to bail us out of some low prices in through here. I think there's plenty of things you could do here to be active in the marketing process and just got to stay on top of it and keep a close eye on it, too, as we go into year end.
Wayne Nelson.
Well, it looks to me like they're going to hold the bean basis a lot tighter than the corn basis here at harvest. So it tells me that I want to sell beans and replace them with options because there's not as much carry as compared to the corn. So I'm going to probably sell beans for cash flow. I'm going to store corn.
And Jerry Gulkey.
Yeah, I think the traders that I talk to and hear rumors from are still have the thought this year that while you didn't dump a lot of grain on the ground last year, we found a home for it. We don't believe you can do that again. So I think the surprise would be as if the farmers don't move a lot of grain at harvest and we find a home for it again. I think a lot of people have underestimated the storing of capability of farmers out there and what the conditional storage capacity that we've built in the last 10 years, as well as some of the elevators. So if we could put this crop away, I think the buyer gets pretty nervous towards the third week of October. And, of course, that coincides with the insurance fixing price. A lot of people aren't talking about the fact that there's from $30 to $70 coming in the mail to some of the farmers that because of last year's ARC program, I believe it is, and we're going to get paid. That helps cash flow. So I think we have more holding power out there. I sense it from guys that maybe they got more holding power than I suspect, and that would be good news. That means that you got to scramble to get this crop away from the farmers. If you haven't got it by, you know, November 1st, then you got to wonder, when are these guys really going to sell next spring? And that cat and mouse game starts all over again, maybe, hopefully.
Jerry Gulkey, of course, is with the Gulkey Group out of Chicago, Illinois, and those ARC County payments will start coming after October the 1st. Those who live in the northern part of Illinois, a good portion of Iowa, probably will see an ARC County payment. If you live in Illinois, central Illinois, and I think to the south, highly unlikely you will see any payment for corn, and I'm pretty certain that nobody will get a payment for soybeans across the whole of the U.S. Our other panelists today have included Jason Clapp. He's with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, along with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.